back, ladies and gentlemen, to the 9-8 podcast. My name is Dave Ellis. As always, I am here talking about the great things that are going on in prog and underground music here in Australia. And normally, and for the last few episodes, in actual fact, Hoggy hasn't been joining me. Normally, he does, the man from the West Coast and co-host of the Dream Theater Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand. But this week, I've actually got someone who I've spoken about quite a bit on this podcast is in the room with me this evening. My other half, Steph. Hello.
Hello.
She's literally sitting. I can like brush her from where I'm sitting.
It's supposed to be a really weird experience for you because I imagine Hoggy probably doesn't like it too much when you touch him.
I mean, we don't talk about that on air. We're going to be chatting about the Dead of Winter Festival today, which we both went to. For the uninitiated of you, the Dead of Winter Festival is a festival that happens every year, focusing around sort of the prog and metal area, I suppose, of music. And it happens up in the Queensland capital, Brisbane. And this year was a massive year. We had six stages over two venues, the Jubilee Hotel and the Tivoli. Tivoli having two, Jubilee having four. And it was just a huge, huge day with acts coming from all over Australia to actually come and play for those in attendance. And tickets weren't actually all that expensive. I think they were about, what, 60, 80 bucks, something like that?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Pretty cheap.
Yeah. I mean, for what you were getting.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It was a full day of music and nothing, I mean, we've postulated about this on the podcast before numerous times, lockout laws, et cetera. I mean, we're not, nothing like that would ever happen in Sydney. Let me put it that way to you.
No.
It was pretty impressive to see that amount of music being played on the day. But we saw quite a few bands on the day and some old friends, that have been on the podcast before, boys from Voyager and The Omnific and, you know, a few others. It was an absolutely awesome day. You, in particular, quite enjoyed a few bands that were early on in the day, particularly a swampy, bluesy, bourbon-swilling outfit that was mixed horribly.
Terribly.
Can we talk about that for a second?
I'm going to teach the sound guys how to mix blues because clearly they've only been listening to hardcore and only know how to put one thing forward.
And that's the guy who says...
Yeah, exactly. Because everything else is so loud anyway, it doesn't matter. But no, they were actually fantastic. So I guess we kicked the day off with a local act. If we want to run chronologically, we'll kick it off with Patient Lounge.
Oh, yeah. How can I forget?
Who opened the day. And I think the big thing for me really was, you know, we've been to festivals like this before and you get there early because you want to get the most out of your ticket. And in Sydney, there's about four people standing in the room with you. Mm. And the band's playing to an empty venue and it's mixed poorly because there's sound bouncing everywhere because there's no people. And it just was not like that at all. We had a reasonably full room considering it was 12:15. There were people inside and outside. They were floating through and Patient Lounge just owned it.
They
they were fantastic.
They were awesome.
Local one to watch for sure. They're Brizzy based.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As most decent music is either Brizzy, Melbourne or Perth based because nothing's coming out of Sydney.
Yeah. And I think
except the boys from Regazelle.
Of course.
We love you guys.
We love you lots. As will be demonstrated as we make our way through this podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that stood out for me was they weren't sloppy. For an opening act, sometimes it can be a little bit daunting, I think, and maybe they're not as tight as they could be because they're a bit nervous. Patient Lounge were tight. Like everything about them was put together. They played a really neat set and they were bang on time. So
yeah, that was the really cool thing. Yeah.
So the inside stage at the Tivoli had a visible clock for the band so they could see they were half hour sets. They could see their clock and they played their last note as it ticked to quarter to one.
Yeah.
Like it was just so impressive. And, you know, for what is a relatively young band to show that much professionalism was actually fantastic. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so. they blew me away. And I actually wanted to get there early because we've mentioned them on the podcast before about, you know, what they are and so on and so forth in previous episodes, actually, where we were talking about the Dead of Winter Festival and how you and I were going up for it. And yeah, I remember saying at that time, no, I want to get there and see those guys early. I'm so glad we did.
Yeah, absolutely worth it.
It was so good.
Yeah, awesome.
I want to do a quick shout out as well to Matt from Code Atlantic and his other half, Angie, who came up as well. They both, we sort of all four of us were hanging, milling around all day together. And just some of the people that we met, because if I don't do it now, I'm going to forget, or some of the people we ran into. So Jack from Osaka Punch.
Yep.
The boys, all the boys from Omnific, from the Omnific, because they were actually playing there.
We also ran into Reggie.
Yeah,
from Osaka Punch.
Running to Reggie as well from Osaka Punch. The guys from Rick Dangerous and the Silky Bantams who played as well. And there are a few others. I'm just trying to... Tiana from her music writing blog thing, the Sound Check, I think it's called, from memory. I need to double check that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were stacks of people and it was really a who's who of the music industry up there on the day.
It was actually fantastic. And then... part of the reason that Angie and I get along quite well is that we both photograph while you boys go and do your music thing.
Yeah. Swoon over guitars mostly.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah.
Forget the guitarist, just the gear. Just the gear.
So Angie and I were really fortunate to meet Liz from Umma Gumma Mama, who is a fantastic photographer. And if I'll get Dave to put a link to her stuff up because all of her Dead of Winter photos are actually fantastic. She was running main stage at the Tivoli and she was just so enthusiastic about the community, not only the music, but photographers and getting people to meet each other and giving people opportunities and all of these kinds of things. And I think that's a really great thing that you maybe don't see as often as you should. And we're fortunate that we get to see it pretty frequently because we do move in quite community-based circles, but it'd be nice to see a lot of that more publicly.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And particularly in Sydney. I mean, the thing that we'll get onto this a little bit later on when we actually bailed on the final band we were going to go and see and went and saw another band that was playing in the Valley that evening. But the difference in the live music scene in between Brisbane and Sydney is night and day.
Just huge.
There is no comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time Patient Lounge had finished, we went outside to watch the hillbilly bourbon swilling mob that I can't remember the name of them
while you keep talking.
And the courtyard, so just so the listeners who weren't there can understand, there were two stages at the Tivoli. So you had the main room at the Tiv. If you've ever been to the Tiv, it's an absolutely fantastic venue and it was a huge sound in that room. And Patient Lounge sounded massive.
Huge.
They sounded huge. Then they had the car park stage as well. So the Tivoli car park, there was a car park set, it's a stage set up. That's where some of the other bands played that evening. And we actually basically rooted ourselves there.
We spent most of our day there.
Most of the day.
Yeah.
It was really good. And then down at the Jubilee, there were four stages. So there were two in the beer garden. There was one upstairs and there was one in the car park. Mm-hmm. And all day they had music going from midday to midnight.
Yeah,
it just was massive. Like
every,
you couldn't
every
move.
Stage back to back, people everywhere. It was
it
awesome,
was unreal, and it was so good. So we went out to see the next band, which were
Swamp Gully Howlers.
Thank you, Swamp Gully Howlers.
Big shout out to those guys because they were fantastic.
They were fantastic, despite the fact we couldn't hear either of the guitars or really her vocals.
I got her vocals, but what we were missing was the excellent fiddler.
The fiddler, of course. Yeah.
So the fiddler was missing. And then occasionally everything just got overtaken by the blues harp, which, you know, I love a good blues harp, but it's really nice to hear the other instruments too.
Yeah. And that was the guy who was doing the mixing on the day clearly had no idea what he was doing when it came to blues / country / that swampy sort of stuff that implements all of that kind of, all those instruments and such. Because I remember as soon as they opened up, I looked at Steph and just went, really? Seriously?
Yeah.
This is atrocious. And it should be noted as well, we walk around with earplugs in whenever we go to gigs. Big shout out to Flare Audio.
Huge.
We have they're not sponsors of the show or anything like that. We just have their stuff. Hoggy's got a pair as well, and his missus has a pair as well. All four of us use them, and I'm pretty – no, Angie and Matt, they use something else. But either which way, get yourselves a decent pair of headphones, earplugs. Get yourselves a decent pair of earplugs because It can save your ears. That's the big thing about it. But B, you can actually hear the music a lot better. And unfortunately, it also means you can hear it when it's a shitty mix, which it unfortunately was for these guys. But they were a hell of a lot of fun.
They were a lot of fun.
Yeah, there were stacks of people in rockabilly outfits, actually.
Yeah, there was so much. I guess, again, it's a reminder that the community is way more diverse than we
like
ever
to think
that it. Yeah, maybe like to think or understand that it is. Mm. You know, there was definitely the fair share of classic metalheads there, black 100%. Band tees and black jeans. But like you say, a ton of that rockabilly stuff. I mean, the Jubilee was running a goth rock stage, so there was heaps of stuff going on down there. And at the Jube, they actually had a prosthetics sort of workshop.
Yeah, that was actually really cool as well.
Yeah, so there were people, there was a full set of prosthetic makeup artists down there that were affixing things to people's faces all day. So you could go down and pay to get your face painted, just kind of whatever, or you could have all this weird stuff stuck to you. And I remember going down slightly early in the day and watching a guy get stuff put on his face. And then by the time I went back 2 or 3 hours later, he was finished and looked fantastic. Mm. It was crazy, but super, super good.
Yeah. And it's really cool as well that they're supporting not just the music community, but also some of the other, I suppose, more, shall we say, nuanced sections of the community as well. Yeah. It's actually really, really cool. That they were doing that. So, yeah, first two bands were absolutely brilliant.
Yep.
And then, other person we caught up with, how could I forget? And we'll actually be cutting to an interview with him a little bit later on in the day, Dale Princey, who was kind enough to give me 10, 15 minutes out of his day and just have a chat. So we'll be showing that interview a little bit later on, and how could I forget such a wonderful human being who's now lost his beard apparently, and I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen any photos yet. I'm really afraid, but it was.
If you've never seen Dale, he was the former bass player for Opus of a Machine, now the bass player for Caligula's Horse, and he's a big, tall, lanky motherfucker. he has so much fun on stage, and his energy is incredible.
Yeah,
but he had this big, amazing beard that made me very jealous because I can't grow beards.
You've missed the key point that the boy is strawberry blonde all over, so it's this big red beard.
Yeah, well, that's too. Yeah.
That, just is this huge part of, you know, the floppy hair and the big beard, and I'm really confused now. I'm conflicted about whether or not I want to see him without the beard.
Yeah, I don't know. But,
sorry, buddy.
Yeah, maybe it's a going to the US thing. Maybe they all think he's terrorists when he gets into LAX.
Well, yeah, that could be problematic.
Yeah. Hey-o! But, no, he's white. He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine. It was a really big day for Dale, though, playing his last show with Opus at Dead of Winter. So,
and there was a certain irony to it as well because Zach actually left Caligula's Horse and played his last show with Caligula's Horse at the Tivoli, formed Opus of a Machine, and now Dale has left Opus of a Machine to join Caligula's Horse, and his last show was at the Tivoli as well. So it kind of swings around about kind of thing, you know.
But it was a really fantastic show. That was relatively early on in the day as well, so we got to catch them fairly early.
And they were awesome.
They were fantastically well put together.
Mm. And they even played a new song.
They did. Mm. It was really good. But quite an emotional set watching them all sort of. They were obviously very sad to see Dale go, but happy to, I think, wish him well on his new endeavors. So you could definitely feel it coming through, but it didn't put a damper on their performance at all. They played a good show.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, the level of professionalism that you like to see in decent bands. It's probably one of the reasons why they had the main stage on the TIV there. So, yeah, first two bands were amazing. Who did we see next? I can't remember who the next person was that we saw.
We switched around a little bit. Oh, that's right. We went to Taisui.
Yeah.
Which was less than anticipated.
Yeah, it was packed. This was the thing I didn't quite understand. I actually thought they were terrible, but you can tell one of us is the more diplomatic than the other. I didn't really like them at all. It was sort of this weird mashup of Korn and Limp Bizkit with a female singer that didn't really make any sense.
Yeah, but musically, I wasn't that bothered because honestly, they come across quite well recorded. I was more put off by the fact that the lead singer looked like she was bored. She barely looked like she was paying any attention. She really didn't look like she wanted to be there.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Threw me more than anything else. Like, I wasn't disliking the tunes. I think they were, again, it was tight. The band were playing well to what she was doing. Like, it all fit, but it was a really flat show.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Yeah. And it was interesting because the place was packed. So this was one of the stages in the beer garden. They had two stages in the beer garden running down at the Jube. And this was sort of the one toward the back. Then there was one further towards the hotel. I wasn't really impressed. I'll be really honest. I wasn't really impressed.
We didn't stay a super long time for that, though.
That being said, there wasn't really a lot else on at that time, so it's not like we were really missing out on much.
No.
One thing I did want to say was you'll notice that we will say that we didn't really see anyone in the main stage of the TIV, with the exception of Patient Lounge, I think, and Cog.
And Opus.
Oh, and Opus. Yeah, there were three bands out of 12, thereabouts.
Yeah, about that.
About 12?
That's a pretty good...
That we saw in that, because the vast majority of the rest of the bands in there were Cookie Monster Vocal, Breakdowns, and
then there was that very strange sideshow where they were doing all the, like, burlesque circus trick stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which you missed out on, but...
Yes, I missed out on. Mm. I missed out on boobies. That's okay.
There weren't really any, like...
Well, it's not like they were out.
They weren't strippers.
No.
Let's put that out there.
They weren't strippers.
It was far too cold in Brisbane for anybody to be dressed like that, though.
Yeah. It was actually a very cold day. Like the 2 days that we were up there, 3 days we were up there, it was remarkably cold.
Yeah, it was cold for Brisbane.
It was even cold for Sydney, realistically. I think it was about... Well, the morning we woke up after the fire alarm thing was going off all bloody night.
Yeah.
It was about 9. Yeah, 9 or 10 in the morning. That's cold for Sydney. That's cold for Sydney. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, considering they're much further north and they like to tout about how it's always sunshiny up there.
Well, it was sunny.
I suppose, yeah.
It was very windy as well.
That's true, yeah. It was windy. So
we digress.
Yes, we digress.
Yeah.
Because that never happens on this show.
No, never at all.
So we saw the Kaisui or... Tai Sui.
And then we jumped back to the TIV to see Baker's Eddie, who I had heard were good. Sort of got some tips from some locals.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the show, but I wouldn't listen to them.
I think this was the point where I was off interviewing.
Yeah.
So
they're along the lines of sort of the Smith Street Band and some of that really... punky garage rock stuff. Again, I always enjoy seeing bands like that play because they're a lot of fun live. They're really energetic and they bring a big personality to the stage, and that was definitely the case. The singer was, you know, playing his guitar on the floor at certain points, and he was standing on the drum kit, and it was a lot of fun to watch, but they're not the kind of band that I generally will go for, so I can't say that I'd listen to them day to day, but I would recommend if they're on a festival set, check them out. And they're all young guys; they're quite young, so I can see them going a long way. It's probably a lot of growth for them in the next couple of years. But
I think this is the point where I was off interviewing Dale, so I've sort of missed that set. By this time, it was probably about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. 3:15 cool. was when they started.
So this is when the shit started to hit the fan.
Ah, yes.
So what happened on the day of the the festival is there were massive winds in Sydney. It was very, very windy in Sydney, so much so that they shut all of the runways down in Sydney International and domestic airports and were running on one runway. I don't need to explain to you how many runways does Sydney have? Like...
No idea, but you can imagine the kind of chaos that would, you know, Sydney's Australia's busiest domestic and international airport.
Yeah. It was huge.
It was massive.
So a lot of bands who decided to fly up on the day, which I want to make this absolutely clear at this point, as someone who has toured as a muso and as someone who has been involved in festivals and has gone to many festivals and has traveled for music and all that sort of stuff, don't fly out on the day. That's all I'm going to say about it. Don't fly out in a day because Uncle Murphy will come knocking and then you will have to do something really ridiculous, like, I don't know, hypothetically, get an Uber from, say, Sydney to Newcastle, fly from Newcastle to the Gold Coast and then get an Uber from the Gold Coast to the Fortitude Valley because that's not something that would ever – oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
At this point they started actually – chopping and changing and moving bands around and such.
Rick Dangerous was supposed to go on after Baker's Eddie.
Yeah.
Rick Dangerous and
the Silky Bantams.
Yeah. And they were delayed. So Baker's Eddie got like an extra 10 minutes on their set. And then it was very clear that Rick Dangerous was not going to make it on time. So they completely shifted the set. They didn't end up going on until 7:30 or something, I think. But in the Jubilee. So they were supposed to be playing the outdoor stage at the Tivoli. They ended up playing down at the Jubilee and they just swapped all the sets up. So there was a little bit of a gap at the Tiv for a while there. Mm. But kudos to the festival organizers because they managed to catch up. Like,
not only did they catch up, but even...
Everybody got their set.
Everyone got their set.
Mm.
And it all still ran smoothly.
Yeah.
There was no, oh, shit, what's happening now? Like, anything like that. It was just, okay, this is what's happening, bang.
I don't think I've ever been to a festival that was as on time.
Yeah.
Like it, you know, like,
well,
I said.
Well, not in Australia anyway.
Well, yeah. It just, everyone was on time and played when they were supposed to play. I know that... The Omnific played a little bit early. They went on stage a little early to try and catch up some of that time.
They did actually, which was actually a bit irritating because we really wanted to see their whole set.
Yeah.
And we were getting food because we were like, wow, we've got like 25 minutes or something. Mm. And then next second they started playing.
Like,
we're like,
oh, it's soundcheck. Oh, wait, no, it's not.
No, that's not soundcheck. This is a festival. Yeah. They don't get one of those.
Yeah. So, but I mean, again, a small sacrifice, I guess, to make up the time in the festival. And it meant that the headliners on every stage were not on time.
That's so, right. Yeah. You know. And while we're talking about being outside and grabbing food, one of the downfalls I felt of that festival was there were not enough food trucks.
Not enough. There were three.
Four.
Were there four?
One, two, three, four. Yeah, four.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine, but really for a festival that size, you should have about 10.
Yeah, easily.
Because the wait time, even just to get like fish and chips or something, was something like 20 minutes.
20 minutes, yeah.
Which is absurd. That's just a ridiculous amount of time to wait, particularly at a festival when you're trying to find stuff.
Having said that, though, the fact that because it was at two venues, you had all-day pass-outs... means that you really could have, if you had wanted to, gone and sourced your own food. Like, it wouldn't have been that far to walk
into the valley. And you could have always got Uber delivered, I suppose.
Exactly. Uber Eats delivery, like, pretty much anything. And we were staying just around the corner. Had we really thought hard about it, we probably could have done that, just popped out.
I was going to say, there was one point where we decided to pop out to go and drop something.
Mm.
And we grabbed a beer at where we were staying because it was absurdly cheaper.
Yeah.
And then sat down and ended up chatting to a whole bunch of other people that were there. And
you made a lot of friends.
I got heckled because I was drinking 4X, which is not something, by the way.
I can't believe you just admitted that.
I'm going to cut that.
Like, that's No, I can't believe you've admitted it. You got to keep it in now.
Yeah, I know, right? In my defense, I was in Brisbane.
We have a policy.
And it wasn't 4X gold that you get in New South Wales. It was the proper 4X bitter. And it actually wasn't too bad.
Yeah, we have a policy when we travel that we will at least once drink the local fare.
Yes.
Doesn't really matter what it is.
What did I try in Adelaide?
We just drank a lot of Coopers.
No. I tried some West Coast Lager.
Oh, yeah, we had West Coast.
That was...
No, West Coast?
Is it West Coast Lager?
The Draft?
No, it wasn't.
West End Lager, that was it.
And it was actually the worst beer I've ever had.
Worse than VB?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big call for you.
I'm going to go worse than VB.
But this is, I mean, this is the level that we do, right? It's like everybody told us the beer was terrible. We drank it anyway because we are intrepid travelers.
Yeah, exactly. You're local. I mean, you go to Belgium, right? You're going to try the Belgian beers. You go to Germany, you're going to have the German beers. You got to do it when you're in Adelaide as well.
Exactly. I did the same thing all the way through Southeast Asia, right? Every country makes their own beer. Mm. It's mostly the same stuff, but you have Myanmar beer and you have Thai beer and you have Vietnamese beer and Cambodian beer. And there's, you know, one or two brands that you can buy in all those countries, but we would always drink the local. Whatever was locally brewed, that's what you drink. Like, that's just how life works.
On a slightly different note, by the way, and just slightly digressing for 4 seconds, Tsingtao from Germany, from China, is German.
Yeah.
Which explains a lot.
Well, it's technically still Chinese. It's just brewed like a German.
Well, yeah, it was a German colony, and they set up a brewery there and then went, okay, so this is what we're going to do. And that explains why it's a halfway decent beer.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a good beer, considering. Mm. Anyway, digressing. Yeah. So all day pass outs.
This program is not sponsored by any beer.
It's really not, although I feel like, despite the fact that it's far too early to have a whiskey at the moment.
pass outs. So because there were two venues, you obviously had to be able to get out one end down the street and in at the other. Mm. We had no trouble all day swapping between venues. No.
Despite the fact that they closed down like half the street as well.
Yeah. Like we had, you know, we weren't bothered by security when we tried to get back in. All we had to do was show our wristbands. No one was, I didn't think I saw anybody who was, you know, ridiculously over the top drunk, despite the fact that we were all drinking.
We did.
One set.
One guy at the end of the night.
Right at the end. But that was like as they were closing the doors, kicking everybody out. It's not like throughout the day.
Yeah.
Every time we tried to move venues, there was some guy being a jerk who had to be, you know, escorted around. Mm. I know we sort of love to hate on Sydney, and I hate to be that guy, but that would never happen here. Like you couldn't have pass outs because people would just be, they would take advantage of that opportunity.
Bloody earth they would.
They'd be ducking out to nip up the street and get tanked and then come back. And that I think is the difference. It's a very different cultural.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. And I've said this before with Progfest, like if they got a really big international headliner, like say Dream Theater or Porcupine Tree, although Porcupine Tree is not around anymore, but et cetera. And they did say two stages and they did the Enmore Theater and say Hideaway Bar as the two stages, you'd have to do pass outs.
Yeah.
And in between those two, there's the Duke.
Yep.
There's
Jacoby's.
Jacoby's.
The Tiki Bar.
Tiki Bar.
Well, Jacoby's is the Tiki Bar.
Oh, sorry. Yep. People would just nip in there for a quick pint and then go to the next one. Mm. And it wouldn't work.
But it also, I guess it also takes away from the venues that are putting the time and effort, like the Hideaway, putting the time and effort into running a portion of that, then losing on drink sales. Mm. And it's, you know, we go to the Hideaway fairly frequently.
Yeah.
Drink prices there are good, people. If you're in Sydney, go to the Hideaway. They have frequent specials. It's live music. It's usually free. Mm.
It's normally like $5 or $6 tinnies.
Yeah. Like, and they rotate the special all the time. So it's a new beer all the time. They got your standard faves like Newtown or On Tap, and they do cheap cocktails. What's not to love? I don't understand.
And the music's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, most of the time.
Most of the time, yeah.
Shady.
So I want to talk for a quick second about a reaction that you had finally when you got to hear the thing that I always bang on about, which is these bands who, without fail every single time, do the thanks so much for coming out tonight. This next song is called and then drop into it, right? We were walking across the floor at the TIV because we were going to get some drinks. And these guys have just finished this song and they're going, you know, fucking thanks so much for coming out, Brisbane. This is amazing. And I knew exactly what was coming. I knew it. And I looked at Steph and this guy just goes, this next one is called and all these people went, and she looked at me with this look of, oh my God, that actually does happen. And there is nothing I hate more.
Yeah.
Because they all do it. And they get it from like Slayer and all those guys who used to do it back in the 80s when it was a thing that people did and they windmilled in cut-off leather denim jackets and all this. Or denim jackets, I should say, not leather denim. Denim jackets, etc. And they're wearing Canadian tuxedos all the time. but it shouldn't be a thing now. And considering how many of those bands on the main stage at the TIV were Cookie Monster, Screamy, Breakdown, Loving, faux gent bands, is metalcore crap.
Yeah.
No offense to the metalcore community, and we do it quite well in Australia, but I think it's shit. It was just, I couldn't imagine actually standing there and listening to 6 hours of that.
Yeah.
It would do my head in.
We stood inside for a little bit, and I lasted about 4 seconds with Matt and Ange watching. I couldn't even tell you what, to be honest.
Yeah.
Something that they were quite interested in seeing. Yeah. Gravemind, I think. Yeah. Beast Wars. No, it was Beast Wars. And
which I really wanted to see as well for the name.
Yeah.
Because it was a TV show when I was growing up as a kid called Beast Wars, and it was awesome.
I made it about 10 minutes and I went, cool, I'm going to go outside and wait for the next thing that's on.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, which I think I went and got a drink and enjoyed
Divine,
you outside.
So
yeah, the next thing was Chaos Divine. Which I want to actually talk about that for a second as well. That was really disheartening because that was the only set that started with no one there.
Yeah.
There was the four of us and that was it.
Yeah. It filled up by the end. They had quite a good crowd by the end of the set, but it was really thin. You know, the four of us standing at the front and then I guess a patchy set of people maybe standing 2 or 3 meters behind us.
Yeah.
It wasn't huge.
No.
But yeah, disheartening because they're quite fun. Like, you know, and I think they blend the two things that a lot of people were there for quite well is that,
absolutely,
you know, that slightly screamy,
I was going to say,
fun time, but
we need to talk about lead singer Dave.
Yeah.
His ability to
How does he do that?
He's got this, for those of you who haven't heard him, and if you haven't heard them, get on it.
This is the bit where you drop some Chaos Divine into the mix, right?
Well, I mean, if I had permission, I probably could. But he goes from really pushing his voice, this, I don't quite know how to describe it without singing it, and I'm not doing that on the podcast.
It's not quite a falsetto.
It's not. It's a pushed, it's like a pushed chest voice.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he's struggling, but he's not. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And then he drops into growly McGrowly face.
Growl.
And then just goes straight back to the other and you go, how?
And
how
then
are you doing
also
this?
Double shout out because the guy was sick as a dog from touring.
Yeah.
And did shows back to back Saturday, Sunday.
We only found out the following night because we flew back to Sydney to see Voyager and Chaos Divine in Sydney with Relica supporting.
Yeah. And that's another story altogether.
That's another story for another time. We found out that he was as crook as a dog.
Yeah. And he, you wouldn't have known.
No, 100%
you wouldn't have known.
No,
he absolutely smashed it.
Yeah.
And they're such a good presence. Like, they're a fun, you know, they're a fun stage presence, but very, very serious, I think. Like, there's a personality there for sure, and the band sort of shows that up, but at the
absolutely
same time, you can tell that they're very serious about their music. They don't take it lightly.
No.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Very quickly, before we get on to some of the more main, well, the main guys that we were there to see, which was Chaos Divine. We've already sort of spoken about them and Voyager, because there's no way we're missing Voyager whenever they go anywhere.
Ever.
Shout out to the guys if you're listening. The Rick Dangerous and the Silky Bantams.
Yes.
Now, you've never seen them before.
I had never seen them before.
I actually know the guys. What was your take on it? Because I know what my take is.
I thought it was a lot of fun. Again, one of those bands I probably wouldn't search up on Spotify and listen to. Just my personal, you know, just my personal feel. But a lot of fun to watch. I always appreciate a band with matching outfits.
Yep.
I really dig that vibe. So that was cool. And then the nature of their outfits, even better. Like, it's quite good. So I thought they were fun. I thought they did really well considering they'd basically just arrived and were thrown immediately on stage.
Yeah.
And
which was due to the aforementioned problems getting out of Sydney.
Totally slayed a set.
And they slayed.
Yeah.
Like, most of their, for those of you who haven't heard them, most of their songs are about drugs. all of their songs are about drugs.
Yeah.
And they do, except for one, which is about grabbing people by the balls.
Yes.
Which I think also has a cocaine reference in it. But anyway, the whole set is just high energy, heavy rock,
yeah.
You know, and they were really good. But, and one thing that was...
They look like an 80s wedding band.
Yes.
Like they're dressed like an 80s wedding band, yeah. And then they're white suits. Not.
except the lead singer. Lead singer looks like a
substitute teacher,
yeah. And what was absolutely incredible about seeing them play was not seeing them. I've seen them stacks of times in Sydney because they're Sydney boys. What was absolutely amazing for me was seeing the crowd reaction.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether or not the crowd knew who they were, etc. I don't know if they've toured up there before, you know, blah, 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 blah. But everyone was into it. And that is something that you would never see in Sydney. I know we've ripped on Sydney a couple of times and because it deserves it.
We will continue to.
Exactly. The thing that was incredible about the whole day was the reaction from the crowds. No matter who was playing, what the type of music was, everyone was into it. And yeah. When I say into it, I don't just mean they were standing there like they do in Sydney with their arms folded with the Sydney semicircle going on and nodding their heads. I mean these guys were bloody moshing to this shit that they never heard.
Yeah, you had to battle to get a spot in the front. You had to... I mean, no one was a douche in the crowd. Like, there was lots of moshing happening and there were a few circle pits that opened up, but they were not aggressive, really. There was just... Everything was pretty pleasant.
I saw a couple of people get knocked down, but they were straight away picked up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't even dangerous, I don't think, at all.
No.
But Rick Dangerous, Silky Bantams, they were awesome. They really came up and showed... I think they showed Brisbane what Sydney can do, which was actually really nice.
Yeah, I think we had some good representatives of that coming up from Sydney.
Yeah, including...
I was going to say, I think we can probably move on to...
Sumeru.
The boys from Sumeru.
Oh, yeah. I'd never heard these guys before. As it happened, I used to work with the bass player. So, Pat, if you're listening, hello. They were not exactly my type of music because, again, Cookie Monster vocals.
Yeah.
It was very thrashy. And you got to remember, by the time they went on stage, they were scheduled actually to go on stage at like 6:30. They went on at 9:15. Now, for those of you with halfway decent memories, you'll remember I made an adage probably about 20 minutes ago about someone who caught a Uber from Sydney to Newcastle, caught a plane from Newcastle to the Gold Coast and then Gold Coast to Fortitude Valley via Uber. That's what their bass player did to get to the gig on time. He spent about $1,000 on travel. I was talking to him afterwards.
Yeah. And they were worried they weren't going to be able to go on at all.
Yep.
Even after their set had been shifted because the guitarist who had all the gear, didn't arrive until about 15 minutes before they went on stage.
Yeah. And I'm going to reiterate what I said earlier. When you've got people that are moving that amount of gear, if you've got one person, a perfect example, NLY, we played down Melbourne.
Yep.
I drove. The reason I drove and I gave myself time to go is because, one, I wanted to drive. Two, because I had people coming with me. And three, because I knew everything would get there and it would get there on time and there would be no issues. As it happened, I arrived half an hour late, but I arrived half an hour late the day of the gig, but I arrived at...
Like 4 hours early.
Yeah, we arrived at about 2:00 in the afternoon. I got there before the guys got there because their flights were delayed. So we arrived at the hotel, checked in, got everything done, settled in, and then the guys arrived about half an hour after me. So this is really a case in point of get there early, get there the day before. I know not everyone can do that because you can't always take time off work, et cetera, et cetera.
I know this was like a particularly bad circumstance because it was quite a large shutdown, but a case of like don't book the flight that's going to get you there just in time.
Oh, 100%.
The flight that's going to get you there with a few hours to spare. Because you know what? It's always more pleasant when you get there, drop your stuff off, and you can have a beer. And you can hang out with some with some peeps, and you can have a chat, see some music, just relax before you got to go on.
If we had have gone up on the day,
I would have hated it.
We would have hated it, and B, we probably would have missed half of it.
Yeah.
So, because we flew up the night before.
And it would have been, like, I just would have been wrecked getting up in the morning to fly and then having to sort it all out. Not to mention that check-in at most places is 2 and the thing started at 12, so we would have been lugging our bags around for most of the morning. Like, it's not ideal.
It's not pleasant. Yeah. No. But the guys from Sumeria did play a good set, I think.
Played a really good set.
I don't know their music very well, so, but they seemed tight for that kind of thrashy, screamy sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But this was, at this point, this was about 9:15 at night, and I was tired.
So tired.
I went and sat down. And yeah, we've sort of sat down in the vicinity and sort of listened to them and such. And, you know, they were good, but they weren't brilliant. We did see a guy get kicked out.
They
went on at 9:15 because they swapped, remember?
Yeah. No.
And then there was a guy that got kicked out at that point because he tried to start a fight.
Was there?
Yeah.
Did I miss that?
Yeah. You did. Oh. So there was a guy, long story short, he was feeling up another woman there and the boyfriend didn't like it too much. So the boyfriend turned around and told him to fuck off. At which point the guy took a swing at the boyfriend. I mean, what did you expect was going to happen?
Yeah.
Especially when boyfriend is 6'4" and built like a brick shit house.
Yeah.
So they threw him out. So, but all in all, considering how many people were there.
Yeah.
2 or 3 instances.
Not too bad.
Big deal.
And I know that you guys have touched on the topics of, you know, gig etiquette and pit etiquette and things before, but can I just say, as a female that's in pits pretty frequently, I'm there for the music. I'm not there so you can touch me.
Yeah.
Back the fuck off.
Yeah. Unless it's me.
Yeah.
It is something that is rampant, particularly in Sydney.
And look, it can be something as simple it's not always intended. I mean, yes, there's total creepoids out there who are
100%
definitely there filling women up. But I know that when we went to Portnoy, I think there was a guy behind me, and I know that you were all like, oh, metal pits are just really touch and feely. But there was a guy that was standing behind me.
I think that's exactly what I said.
That's but almost exactly what you said.
I don't think so. I think it was just more the fact that it was quite.
It was tight. It was tight, but this guy had his arms around me. And it's like, okay, first off, I don't know you. Get your arm off me. I have no issue.
Mm-hmm.
I have no issue with people being like next to me. I have no issue with people being like brushing up against me, elbows, like whatever. That's, you know, that's what you get when you're in a pit. But this guy was standing behind me with his arm around my shoulder like we were friends. I'm like, first off, get out of my space. Secondly, at one point he reached over and grabbed my chest. Now, again, I don't think that he intended to do that because after that, he barely touched me. I think he thought I was a dude and then went, oh, shit. And, okay, I get that. But how about we go back to that bit where it's like, if you don't know that person, maybe don't put your arm around them. Anyone.
I get that. I've done that in pits before with guys.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's especially when you're all there, when it's a very tight-knit community. I understand that. But you do have to be obviously very aware of this. One thing I will say, and sort of as not a counterpoint, but as in addendum to that, if you are a reasonably attractive female, you cannot use that to get to the front of the pit, especially when I've been standing there since fucking 2:00 in the afternoon and I've gone to see the fucking main band. Fuck you, fuck off.
Yeah.
Right? I am not letting you in.
Agreed.
I don't care how attractive you are and I don't care how much your tits are hanging out of your outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Right? And I have said that and you've seen me say that to people before at gigs.
Yeah.
Not Portnoy. It was somewhere. I can't remember. And I remember this chick came up and was like, oh, can I just get on? No. I've been here since 2:00. Mm. Fuck off.
Yeah.
And she got the shits. That's like, no.
Yeah. That stands for like anybody that tries to push up.
Yes, exactly.
5 seconds before the show starts. Like,
yeah.
No, get here early. Support the support acts.
Yeah, exactly.
Find some music you might actually like. Because the amount of times I've gone early and seen a band and then been like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Progfest.
Yeah. Every damn time.
How many did we discover at Progfest?
You... Yeah, this we're really off track now, but there's so many rants to be had about this.
Anyway, 100%. There are lots of rants to be had about
this. You can cut as much of
that
out as you like.
Oh, no, that will be staying in. so, yeah, so after the little wee sit down that we had.
We break plenty of water.
We actually went up and saw, was that the point where we saw Voyager?
No, that was after Voyager.
Okay, that was after Voyager. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Voyager.
Yeah.
Because let's be really honest, they were the band, they and Chaos Divine were the two bands we were there to see, despite Cog headlining.
I'm a tragic.
We've seen,
I'm a Voyager tragic.
We've seen Cog so many times. It's between the two of us. I mean, we've seen them like 20 times.
We've seen them twice.
Well, between the two of us as well, all my times that I've seen them included. Stacks and stacks of times. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Voyager were awesome.
Yeah, they were.
They were easily the best mixed band of the night.
Yep.
Easily.
That's because they brought their own sound guy.
Well, partly, and also I think it's not entirely the sound guy's job to mix your sound, right? So despite what I said earlier about the blues band that were mixed terribly, it's not entirely the sound guy's job. It's their job to get levels right, but it's not their job to mix frequencies and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. You should be able to plug in and you should be able to hear absolutely everyone, right? Yeah. So the thing that I like about these guys is obviously they have enough breadth and depth of knowledge that they know exactly where they're all sitting, exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it
helps. It helps that they're, you know, wrapping up. They were wrapping up the end of a tour.
Yeah.
So
second last
like
show.
Like I say, they brought their own sound guy with them because he's been on tour with them the entire time. So by this point, they're a well-oiled machine. Like it took them all of 4 seconds to set up on stage. Like they just got there and it was done. Another thing that's quite good was obviously Chaos Divine's been touring with Voyager.
Yeah.
So they're sharing a kit.
Yeah.
The drummers,
I think they were sharing a lot of backstage stuff, man. Just, I'm pretty sure they were, most of their backline was shared.
I'm pretty sure their backline, but definitely the kit, they're splitting. So when Chaos Divine gets up to go on stage, Ash from Voyager's right there setting up kit with the drummer. It's like...
Or Animal.
Animal. Literally Animal. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, Ash, but it's a perfect comparison.
If you're listening.
But I thought that was just like, again, we go back to this community vibe. Like, it wasn't, oh, well, you're on first, so go set the kit up for me and I'll just adjust it when I'm done. It's in the trenches, getting shit done, getting shit sorted so that you can be, both of you can be the best that you can be on stage.
100%.
And I think it's a really good thing. But they did. Voyager played a really fantastic show.
They played a phenomenal show.
They played pretty much everything we wanted to hear.
Yep.
Almost.
Well, they played everything we wanted to hear and more the following night when we saw
them. And I'm just going to skip forward a little bit to probably my favorite moment of the entire set, which was we're getting right into the middle of Bright Star. It's really starting to pick up.
This was awesome. Second verse.
Everybody's getting really into it. And then all of a sudden, nothing but drums.
No power, no lights.
Everything went out.
No no audio.
The vocals were gone. The guitars were gone. All there was was Animal on the drums.
Yep.
And to his credit, didn't break stride.
He kept going.
Just kept playing. The crowd sort of faltered a little and went, huh? And then realized what was going on and just kept singing.
Yep. Carried the whole song until the end of the second chorus.
Yep.
And then
when
the power came back on and they dropped in.
Perfect timing.
Beats, no missing anything. They dropped right into it. We found out
from an inside source.
The following day, what had happened was someone had plugged their phone in because that entire stage apparently was being run off one PowerPoint.
Yeah. Straw that broke the camel's back.
Let's just talk about that for 1 second.
Yeah, fire hazard.
Forget the fire hazard. Stupid idea to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, you're running amps. At least two amplifiers, entire mic ribbons, like, you know, a stack of stuff. It should not be run off one. That's at least three wall sockets. Like, you got to do anyway. But the thing that blew my mind was, and I'm hoping if anyone is listening to this and you have footage of that, please put it up.
Mm.
Please. I actually haven't even Googled it to see if it's up because it was so good.
It was very impressive.
It was awesome. Not only from the band's point of view, but from the fans' point of view as well. Mm. It was, oh, man, it was unreal. Yeah, but
yeah,
that was awesome.
Phone charges will be the end of all of us.
Absolutely. And one thing that that Danny actually brought up mid-set was all around the TIV and the Jubilee and all that sort of stuff were all residential blocks. And you can actually see it if you stood in the car park at the TIV and looked straight up to the back. There's a big residential apartment block that was right behind it. And he said, you know, these guys have been putting up with this all day. So thanks to them.
Yeah.
And thanks to the councils who've basically made it illegal now to whinge about live music venues up there. There's a whole protected zone, which is basically all of the Fortitude Valley, which is all protected live music zone. So if you buy an apartment or you move into that area, you can't whinge. Unlike in Sydney, where you buy a place next to a pub and then you start whinging and bitching and moaning because the place, like the Annandale Hotel.
Unless you're in the inner west.
Now.
Thanks, Darcy Byrne.
How long did it bloody take him? Like, sorry, but he gets credit for doing it.
It is completely ridiculous, and that's really the only time that sentence will probably come out of my mouth. But no, I agree. It was really good to see that. And to be honest, if you're the kind of person who's going to move into Fortitude Valley, I would hope that you're the kind of person who's going to be there at the festival anyway.
100%.
Or at the one that's on next weekend, which is more your speed. You know, you're probably not going to get up people for being in your zone. Like, line is, if you don't want the noise, stick to the suburbs.
That's exactly it. You know? Yeah. But it was just incredible.
The other fantastic moment was when Ash broke a snare drum and couldn't get Danny's attention, so he had to throw his drumstick at him. And our very good friend Matt was very excited to end up with a drumstick.
Yeah, that's right.
Got thrown halfway across the stage.
And it looked like a bit of a prima donna moment.
Yeah.
Like he'd got the shits with something and just threw it at him. And then we realized what had happened because Danny was like, oh, Ash has broke a snare head.
Give Hold us on a second.
And then we all went, oh, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was shocked because it's pretty normal for drummers to throw a drumstick when they've broken one. Breaks and you just sort of flick it and wherever it ends
broken
up.
Broken a drumstick.
Broken a drumstick. So like where, you know, that just ends up wherever it ends up and you end up with a broken drumstick on stage. Yeah. But this was a full intact drumstick and I was like, what's that doing there? How did it? Why?
And Matt walked around for the rest of the night clutching that thing.
He was so excited.
It was his only child. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And at some point, actually, someone tried to steal it from him, and he was like, "Hey, whoa. Actually, it was one of those aforementioned attractive girls who were like, "Oh my god, can I have a drumstick?" And he was "Fuck off."
Yeah.
But the Voyager slayed it. They slayed it. And can we digress for 4 seconds just to talk about seeing them the following night in Sydney? Because at the end of their set, I actually screamed out to Danny. I was like, I'll see you tomorrow night. And he was like, ha-ha, yeah. And then the following night, we're on the railing in Sydney at Crowbar. And they're all setting up and everything. And I've gone, Danny. And he looked down and went, just sort of double take. I went, oh, hey. It's like, told you we'd see you tomorrow night. And we had a chat with them after and everything. And not to break the illusion or anything like that, but they did do a cover of Darude's Sandstorm.
Which apparently they've played elsewhere before.
Apparently,
But it was quite good. I really enjoyed it.
It was fucking awesome.
Everybody went mental, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, as sort of kitsch and ridiculous as Darude has become, because, you know, Sandstorm is now just this, like, you know, it has its own persona.
Yeah.
Everyone just ran with it. And you know, I'm always going to love Danny and the Keytar. So,
absolutely. I was actually speaking to Simone yesterday. Simone, the guitarist from Voyager, for those listening who don't know who she is, who's a weapon, by the way, a weapon of a guitarist. And I was listening to, some stuff on YouTube and the Final Countdown came up and I was like, oh, they should cover this. So I showed her a message. I'm like, have you guys ever thought about covering this? She's like, yeah, we've done it a couple of times. I'm like, oh, of course you have. But they don't do a lot of it and they don't really announce when they're going to do anything.
No,
and they do
fun.
It so sporadically that it just becomes an awesome part of their set for a select few.
Yeah. Which I really, I like that about it.
I appreciate that.
The other thing was that on the Saturday night when we were in Brisbane, we got to the end of the set and we called up, "Hey Danny, can we have your
set list?"
And he was like, "It's all up here, mate." Yeah. Just pointed at his head, and it's like, "I'm sorry, what?"
Yeah.
They don't play to a set list. They just look at each other and go, "What are we going to play today?"
Yeah.
So he gave me a torn piece of Chaos Divine set list, and I now have the top corner and half a letter. So
yeah. But no, they were absolutely awesome. As to be expected.
And again, we'll be there at pretty much every show that we get access to. That's absolutely. Just kind of how we roll.
Absolutely. So. With any luck, we might be seeing them in Europe next year. So
that'd be really nice.
That'd be really cool. One thing, and the last band I suppose that we were there to see was Cog.
Mm-hmm.
However.
Let's just back up a little bit and maybe set the scene on Cog. So we got there probably a little bit later than we normally would have for something like that because we went down to see Sumeru.
Yeah.
So generally we would just establish ourselves somewhere in the middle of the pack, try to get probably up the front a little bit and be ready for a set like that. That's the standard for what we normally do. Again, we were planning on splitting to see Red Gazelle, so there was no point in us kind of fishing our way through and then having to fish our way back.
I was going
to
say, Red Gazelle, friends of ours from Sydney, who I've spoken about on the podcast before, were actually happened to be playing in Brisbane that night. So we had a decision to make. Were we going to go and see Red Gazelle or were we going to stick around for Cog?
So we obviously decided to head to Red Gazelle,
yeah.
Which meant that we weren't in position. And I set this up because I know where you're going to go with your spiel after this. So I just want to set up where we would normally be to, like, I guess, as a comparison. Mm. On top of that, if you've been to the Tivoli, you'll know that they have an upstairs section.
It's even like if you've seen photos of it, you know,
like a horseshoe shape,
yeah,
like above the
dress
top.
Circle kind of
yeah.
thing.
That was closed off most of the day as the VIP area at the Tiv. Now, most of the stuff for VIP was at the Jubilee. They had their own bar and there was a few other bits and pieces, but the VIP viewing area was upstairs at the Tiv.
Mm. Which, may I say, I'm glad we didn't buy the VIP tickets.
Yeah, it really didn't feel worth the extra $40-$50 or whatever.
Absolutely
it was.
Not.
I mean, feel free to argue with us if you did buy a VIP ticket and felt like you got a lot out of it. We'll be happy to hear your
opinions
responses.
And everything like that. It was fine. We didn't experience it, but from what we saw, it didn't look like it was anything super amazing.
So for Cog, they opened up the dress circle and that was all free reign because they obviously knew they were going to get quite a lot more people
and it was
through
packed.
There. And it was packed. And so we, again, trying to avoid the crowds, thinking we'd maybe get a decent view, jumped up top. It didn't really work out.
No.
I guess the way that we thought it would.
The view was fine, with the exception of the...
For you, I couldn't see a thing.
With the exception of... Well, to be fair, you did go and sit off to the side.
Because I couldn't see anything.
Right, okay. there was a chick who was sitting next to me, leaning over the balcony and, like, doing... Like, pumping her fist outwards... I don't know why she just was and was really fucking annoying, to be really honest with you. And her boyfriend / I don't know, gig buddy, whatever he was standing there and was, you know, rubbing up against me as well. And it's like, well, I if I wanted this, I'd go into the pit, you know, go down into the pit, do it down there, not up here, man. This is where you come so you don't have to deal with fucksticks like you. However, the thing that I actually did want to talk about was the sound. Not the best I've ever heard them.
No.
They didn't have that. If you've ever seen Cog, you know that they have that chest rattling bottom end, particularly in songs like Resonate, Are You Interested, those sorts of ones where it really kicks you in the chest. And it didn't have any of that. It felt a bit dead.
Which, again, part of the reason that I preface and set this up is that we were upstairs. Don't know what it was like downstairs.
Whether
it's just a case of everything sort of set up to play well downstairs. It's not easy to set sound up to play well everywhere in a venue like that.
Yeah, true.
And considering the sound had been really good in that room most of the day, I probably think we have a slightly squiffy view on it.
Yeah.
So I'll measure, like I'll temper the the commentary because, yeah, it wasn't the best I've ever heard them, but we were in probably an interesting position. And like I said, by this point, we'd been up and around and walking around and standing on our feet and dealing with crowds for near on 12 hours.
Yeah.
I was pretty set. Had I found myself a nice spot in the back and had a lovely cup of tea, I probably would have enjoyed it just as much. That I guess that's kind of the level of where I was at. I really wasn't in the mood by that point to deal with crowds, which is why when I couldn't see anything, I went, okay, cool, I'm just going to go and sit down because there's no point in me standing up if I can't see it.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
We stayed for about three songs.
Two.
I think. Two?
Two. Yeah, we stayed for the opener, whatever it was, and then Are You Interested? Mm. And then we bailed and we went and saw Red Gazelle. Mm. And this is the part where I want to talk about the actual Fortitude Valley itself. So we walked from the TIV down through into the valley. For those of you who remember what the King's Cross used to be like before the lockout laws were involved, it was like that, only a bit better.
Mm. Just waves of people.
Waves. The whole mall was completely chockers.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was full, but it wasn't chaotic. It didn't feel, didn't worry me. Being that many people around didn't concern me.
No, not at all.
There were lots of people moving sort of club to club. There were lots of people out getting food. There was like, you know, a little bit, it was all pretty good. And we made our way down into Greaser Bar. And even at like 11 o'clock, they went on at 11, yeah? So we got there just around 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
It wasn't packed.
I think they went on at 11:15, I think, because I remember leaving at about 10 past and took us 5 minutes to walk down there.
Yeah, so. But it wasn't packed in there. Like it was busy, but it wasn't.
It wasn't shoulder to shoulder. So, yeah. It wasn't sardines.
It wasn't that there were so few venues that you had to feel like you had to be in this one because there's nowhere else to go.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, this is looking a bit packed. We might just go up to blah, 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 you know.
And there was upstairs, there was a pub / thing upstairs. When we left after Red Gazelle's set, because we just went home, it was just like, nope, sleep time, walked upstairs and there was another band playing, I heard, over the way.
Yeah.
Down the road, there was a Brisbane Crowbar. There were two or three other live music venues we passed on the way home.
Yeah.
We were going to get food and we didn't find anywhere on the way home because we walked away from the valley, which was really silly. But
sorry,
I wasn't going to blame you for it, but now that you've brought it up, it was Steph's fault because she said we'd find something on the way home and I believed her. So
I really did think we were going to, but to be fair, I think we were better off for not eating that pizza.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That was awful looking pizza actually from memory.
It's a place called New York Slice
and it was not New York
and
Slice.
And everything was thin. Yeah. Get out. What I want is a big, like, thick base.
Yep.
Shitloads of toppings.
Yep.
And I want that bitch to be foldable.
Yep.
And just, yeah.
In
they,
your face.
They were piddly looking and I don't know, maybe they're better on, like, mass demand, but.
Yeah, maybe. Don't know.
I'll try not to be too mean.
But overall, at the end of the night. And that was actually when we were heading down to see Red Gazelle, we ran into Scott. And
Alex
from Voyager. And it was actually really funny because Scott has been on the show before. I've interviewed him, as dedicated listeners would know. And we're walking down and we're chatting away and we said, oh, we'll see you tomorrow night. Da, 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 da. He said, yeah. Anyway, it sort of became apparent through the conversation that I knew who he was, but he didn't quite put two and two together.
You were aware that you'd been talking multiple times and had a repertoire.
Yeah.
He's just and going. Is that the right word?
A rapport.
That's the one I'm looking for. But yeah, he really hadn't put it together.
Yeah. And I was like, do you know who I am, right? And he goes, if I'm honest, not really. I said, it's Dave from the Night Podcast. He's like, oh, shit. Hey, man. It was a really funny moment.
It was good.
But it was great to meet those guys and obviously then see them the following night as well. I will say this. I will definitely go back.
Yeah.
Providing 100%. It's a decent lineup, as with every festival. You know,
but look,
the lineup's
to be fair,
good.
This is the kind of festival that I'd probably go to even if I knew no one on the set. Because it was well run. We found a lot
it
of stuff
really
we liked.
Well,
and what better excuse to get away for a weekend than to
go and see some music.
Take a leave day, fly up to Brisbane, enjoy some good food. You know, now that we sort of, I guess, know what's available, we'd probably get a little bit more out of Brisbane next time too. And not having to fly back quite as early as we did on Sunday in lieu of the fact that we had to go to a gig, we'd probably get a whole Sunday out of it.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely worth a little mini break for something like that.
Absolutely.
You know, and if it, you start to encourage those sort of music tourism stats, and guess what happens? You get more and more venues and you get more stuff like it. So I think there's no downside to that.
Not at all. Not at all. But overall, it was an absolutely brilliant, brilliant festival, I felt. As you said, well run. Even things like the drink prices and all that weren't over the top.
No, they were Sydney drink prices. They were normal. They weren't even Sydney drink prices.
They were a bit cheaper.
They weren't jacked up either. Like, you normally go to a festival and it's like, great, the premix is $16.
I think they were $9.50.
It was $9.50 for a, if you bought like a bourbon and coke and it came in a cup, or $11 for a premix.
The
premix was obviously way better value because you're getting like 1.4 instead of
one. Yeah.
But I mean, who's counting?
Exactly. I mean, we weren't. But beyond that, I mean, the crowd was really well behaved, with the exception of like one or two people.
Not to mention that as we were getting towards the end of the day, looking at the banners on the side of the, you know, those like shade cloth sort of banners they put up on the side of the thing. So obviously the festival itself is listed. Young Henry's is a main supporter.
As was Fireball Whiskey.
And Fireball Whiskey. Big shout out to both of those guys, because there was dedicated bars for both of those companies.
Yep.
But they were also being sold throughout the day.
Actually, that was something that was funny when I went up to get a beer at the start of the day, and I was like, what do you want? And you said, oh, something like an IPA or something. Like, okay, no worries. So I just went over, and they didn't really have anything that sort of matched that thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they have two of the Newtowner.
Yeah. And the lady, something familiar.
The lady's looking through the thing, and she's like, oh, I can't find it. It's right there, silver can. She's like, oh, okay.
Silver can with the blue label.
I've never had this before. I was like, yeah, pick the Sydney cider.
Yeah. But obviously massive props to those companies for supporting
100%.
Things like this. But the big shocker, and maybe it shouldn't have been a shock, but the thing that blew us away was a really prominent Queensland government label on that sign.
Mm-hmm.
They're right there backing that festival just as much as the promoters are, and I think that's a huge difference.
Well, the big difference, I mean, when we left the airport.
Yeah.
We got into an Uber at the airport when we flew in, and as we're driving out, there was a big sign for like a national songwriting competition that I hadn't even heard of.
Yeah.
And I'm across this stuff.
Mm.
I know what's going on. I'd never heard of this festival. I was like, this competition. I was like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, we just don't find out about that shit in Sydney.
Yeah. So I think, overall, we were really impressed.
Massively impressed.
And I've already recommended it to at least one person. I said, look, you should go next year. It was a really good festival. We had a really great time.
Mm.
Definitely keep it on your radar.
Absolutely.
If I remember correctly, the lineup for this year was announced like around November, December.
Yeah.
So I would suspect that they'll probably do sort of same again. It's planned pretty far in advance.
Yeah. And it's obvious that it's planned quite far in advance too, just by how well run it is, as we've mentioned.
Yeah.
I hope they can bring it to other cities as well. It'd be really nice to see one in Melbourne. It'd be great to see one in Sydney, but you'd just never get anyone to it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So, but definitely we'll go again.
Mm. Mm. 110%.
Mm. So with that, I think what I'm going to do now is we're going to cut to an interview that I did on the ground when we were there. We alluded to it a little bit earlier. Dale Princey, who used to be the bass player for Opus of a Machine and is now the bass player for the monumental Caligula's Horse, who are actually playing down here soon. I think
I believe that to be the case.
Sometime. I caught up with him as we were actually standing next to the fish and chip food truck, and you can actually hear some of the music that's going on in the background. So this is my interview with Dale Princey. Please enjoy.
The 9/8 interview.
I'm currently at the Dead of Winter Festival. I've been here for a few hours now, and I was lucky enough to run into a good friend of mine, Dale Princey. You might know him as the bassist, well, actually former bass player for Opus of a Machine, or the new bass player for the wonderful Caligula's Horse. Dale, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, my very good man.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm a tired, tired boy, but I'm doing very well. I've got that like post-show adrenaline rush that's really nice right now. Nice and serene.
Awesome.
Because you've been doing a whole bunch of lighting stuff over the last little while, because you actually do lighting for Sucker Punch, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we were in Melbourne last night doing COG as well. So obviously COG are headlining Dead of Winter today. So yeah, we were doing the Croxton. So there was like 1,200 sweaty people at the Croxton last night. And then, yeah, the night before that, we were doing Circles in Sydney. And Ebon Ivory and Glass Ocean were on that as well. And Red Bee, who I'd only heard of maybe last week or something. And they were fucking awesome as well. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm... For those of you who are listening in and you haven't been to Dead of Winter, they've actually shut down a section of the street here between the Tivoli and the Jubilee Hotel, where we've got a whole bunch of food trucks and, you know, there's a whole bunch of other stuff sort of going on. There's two stages here at the Tivoli, and I believe there's three or four down at the Jubilee. It's a massive festival, and I'm blown away by exactly what's going on here in Brisbane. Is this normal for Brisbane?
Man, like, the mix of genres is the thing that gets me, I think. So the way that they've divvied it up, it's really, really awesome, because you get sort of a whole bunch of different demographics sort of going up and down the street and sort of exchanging glances, and everyone sort of... No one's really standoffish. Everyone's sort of just jubilant and smiling and laughing and stuff. It's a very interesting festival, and I've got to say, I actually really love it. I'm loving this thing. I don't know why I didn't go last year. I think I had something on at the time, or I was doing some tour or something. But yeah, it's lovely. This street is really pleasant. Everyone's having beers and chilling out. It's great. Yeah.
And it is, I mean, I can see why the creative juices up here are so different to what they are in Sydney, being a Sydney cider and you having been there a few times. Off air, just before we started recording, you said to me, you know, oh, why wouldn't something like this happen in Sydney? I believe my exact response was because Sydney's a shit tip. But I mean, you're right. The mix of genres and everything here is absolutely, you know, incredible.
Yeah, you've got people that are sort of in the full on get up, like the goth get up, and then the it's kind of glam goth. Yeah, people with horns and stuff on their heads in like face paint and stuff. It's awesome. Yeah.
it's a great festival. I encourage anyone who hasn't been to Dead of Winter before, wherever you are, book a ticket and come to this, because it's absolutely fantastic. Actually, there's people walking past right now, and there's a guy with big long metal hair. There's a chick walking along with a what would you call it? Like a US
jersey. Yeah.
US high school jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Letterman jacket.
Something like that. Anyway, but it's so cool. It's such a cool thing. Now, emotional for you.
Yeah.
Last show with Opus of a Machine.
Yeah.
How are you feeling after it?
Man, it's a catharsis getting on stage basically every time. But that one was a pretty special one. It's, I think, a mix of sleeplessness and being a last show. Yeah, it was exactly the feelings that I thought would happen on stage. I just tried to do them earlier so there wouldn't be at the end of the set when everyone's expecting it to sort of be all sad and stuff. So there were some really cool sort of glances on stage. You know, we were having fun, I think. And that was pretty indicative in the rehearsal as well. Our last rehearsal was just so much fun. It was the regular sort of do the drills, do make sure everything's really tight, do all that jazz. And then we're like, oh, you want to run another one? Yeah, fuck it, why not? Let's do it. And we're all just screwing around. I think we did Strength in Stone as like a funk rendition, which was ridiculous. We were just cracking up. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty pretty on top of it, actually. I'm feeling pretty good.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Smiles.
It's really good to see that. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart. You've been working so hard.
Yeah.
And it's obvious. It comes across the way you play bass on stage and the way you do your lighting and everything. You're making a go of it, and it's good to see things working. So that's absolutely awesome. What's next for you? Obviously, you've got your stuff with Caligula and your lighting stuff on the side. You know, can you shed any light on what's happening with Caligula next, or is it all hush hush?
Yeah. A lot of it's out in the open at the moment. We're doing the Let It Grow tour in August, which is Tide Thief and River's End and Bloom back to back. So that one's right there. That one's a lot of fun at the moment, because we're going back and looking at all the stuff that I was sort of involved in the process of Tired a bit with the recording, looking at all the stuff that was sort of done back then and the different sort of musicians that we are now. is really interesting. And I'm definitely leveling up at the moment, learning all of Dave's awesome parts and all of Sam's great arrangement stuff. Yeah, that's what's sort of going on at the moment there. We've got Prog Power in America that's confirmed at the moment as well. So jumping...
Congrats.
Yeah, dude, that's going to be... I only found out recently the esteem of that show. It's exactly, man. Yeah, Dream Theater, that's it, yeah. So, that one hit me like a ton of bricks last week. I was like, oh, okay, so this is actually like a bit of a big deal. I'm like the puppy dog of the group right now, just being like, oh, okay, oh, cool, we're doing these really awesome things that are already set up. All right, yeah, cool, awesome. But, yeah, I think we've got our roles really well defined at the moment in the band, so we're all working really cohesively. That's probably the most exciting thing about Seahorse right now, is we're just all infatuated with each other. Yeah.
I didn't know that you had a hand in the recording process for that album.
Yeah, so Sam and I have been friends, I hope we've been friends, Sam, if you're listening, since about 2011, and that was, I think we met each other maybe two or three weeks after Moments came out. Started uni together, went all the way through uni and did honours together, and Tide was recorded about 2013, so I was pretty closely involved with all of that back then, and even back then, it was just a whirlwind being a part of that and being sort of in, I think I was in sort of punk bands back then, and I was just getting sort of ingratiated into prog music back then, and it's been just exponential since then, my love for prog music.
It's kind of like the Pringles. Once you prog, you can't stop.
Oh, man, you got me. Yep, you got me. Once you prog, you can't stop. That's
it. Now, Seahorse, you guys are touring. What are the dates you guys are touring?
So we've got August 10, which is Brisbane at the Zoo. Then back-to-back, August 16 and 17, Sydney, we're doing the Factory Theatre. And then doing Max Watts in Melbourne.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be bitchin'. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're great venues. Yep. All of them. They're all... Oh, I assume the Zoo. Actually, I've never actually been to the Zoo, so...
You haven't been to the Zoo?
I haven't, actually. I should... Yeah.
I do.
Hey. No, actually, I've never been to the Zoo, but Max Watts in Melbourne, I've been. Actually, I saw Copia play there years ago, before they were Copia, when they were a Sound Mind.
Okay.
And Sydney, you guys are playing Factory. Factory's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
so,
man.
You know.
Yeah. We did, Opus did Progfest down at, I think they call it Factory Floor, the venue below Factory Theatre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was when we met. Yeah.
Exactly.
2 years ago.
Yep.
2.5.
Yeah, exactly. That venue was really cool because it's sort of got the really small club vibe to it, but it's not all grimy. It's like a really nice sort of... It's like the Zoo, but smaller. Yeah, I love that one. Anyway, we get to do the big stage there, which is going to be awesome.
You know this. We all love music on the 9-8 podcast, right?
Yeah.
Something I always ask everyone that comes on here, for myself, my co-host Hoggy, and all our listeners, give us an album that you'd love everyone to listen to. It doesn't have to be your own.
Yeah.
It could be from any time. Just something that's a bit, maybe something a bit out of the box. I don't know.
Absolutely.
But something that's a good defining album for you.
Good defining album. So I might go with just something that I'm in love with at the moment. I've just fallen in love with a lot of Oliver Arnold's work. It's sort of minimalist piano sort of stuff. Actually, Bill Lawrence as well. Actually, strangely enough, a lot of sort of piano stuff recently, like ambient sort of minimalist piano music. So Bill Lawrence's Cables recently, it's a really dark sort of album, very sci-fi, introspective, very visceral album, actually, Cables. Yeah, it's a bit different from the other stuff, which is a bit more uplifting, and this one is like a... I don't know what I get from it. There's some sort of synesthetic image that I get from the whole album that I'm struggling to find right now. But yeah, that and Oliver Arnold's and Chiasmos as well. Really happy sort of upbeat EP that he did with, was it Arnold Dan? No, I can't remember who it was. Anyway, great albums. Yeah.
Cool. I'll check them out. I'll make sure everyone does. Dale, yep. Thank you so much for joining us.
Dude, thank you so much for having me on the Odd Time Signature podcast.
Thanks, mate. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. The 9-8 interview.
So, guys, that brings us to the end of another episode of the 9-8 podcast. Thank you so much for listening to us. As I'm sitting here, just earlier I just mentioned that Caligula's Horse will be in Sydney. They're doing an Australian tour. They're playing the Zoo in Brisbane on August 10, Friday, August 16th, at the Factory Theatre here in Sydney, and Saturday, August 17, Max Watts there in Melbourne. Thank you so much for joining us once again on the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. Next time, Hoggy will be rejoining us after his epic jaunt across Europe, and he'll be telling us all about the cool bands that he's discovered and making us all green with envy once again. Thank you so much to my other half for joining us on this episode. Thank you.
Most welcome. Most welcome. Thanks for having me.
She more often than not hears me talking incessantly for an hour on end or 2 hours talking to Hoggy about things and laughing about it and all that. And now she's actually been part of the show, which I think is great. Now we just have to work on Christina being part of the show, and we can go from there.
We'll get there.
We'll get there eventually. So thanks, guys, again, once again, for listening. As always, if you want to get in contact, you can get in contact with us. All the contact details are in the show notes. And we'll see you again next time.
Bye.